Cover three verses this morning, 33 through 35, from Canto 3, chapter 4. Okay? The speaker is Sutta Goswami. Same speaker at the very beginning. Sutta Goswami was in the audience, listening, the sages, among the sages that were hearing. Shukadeva Goswami narrated to Maharaj Pariksit, so now he's retelling what he heard to the sages, headed by Shaunaka. Yesterday's verse, Sutta explained that Shukadeva Goswami informed Maharaj Pariksit that Uddhava, being thus instructed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the source of all Vedic knowledge and the spiritual master of the three worlds, reached the pilgrimage site of Badrika Ashram, that's Uddhava, went, and engaged himself there in trance. Samadhina is fully concentrated in his mind upon the personality of Godhead, and his service wasn't just like go there and go into a trance. He was to give teachings, and through those teachings give the Lord's association. Krishna wanted to give his association to those sages because they were eager for his association. The concluding part of yesterday's purport. Everyone must have been very anxious to know about the mystery of the annihilation of the Yadu dynasty. They were so powerful. They could not be defeated by anybody except themselves. So it's a big mystery. How did all this happen? So it's now being explained. The Leela that Krishna has just performed is his Moksha Leela, his disappearance pastime. We know this verse from Bhagavad Gita. You must know this verse from Bhagavad Gita. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo vedi tatvataha chappadeham punar janma naiti mameti sorjana. Maybe you can learn that verse today. Chapter 4, Bhagavad Gita. So, in that verse, Krishna is saying, one who knows the divyam, it sounds very much like the English word, divine, divyam. One who knows the transcendental nature of my janma, you know the meaning of janma? Like janmastami, Krishna janmastami, janma. Janma means birth, janma. Nature of my janma and my activity, janma karma, chame divyam. So, interestingly, before the appearance of Krishna is described in the 10th canto, we're hearing about the disappearance of Krishna in the 3rd canto. Because that's equally transcendental. Anything Krishna does is transcendental. And it's a mystery. Not only Krishna, but all the associates of Krishna. And then here's another mystery, except for one. Except for the most confidential associate of Krishna. Uddhava, everyone also is taken by Krishna's own Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. In his commentary, he says, by the Lord's Leela Shakti, all the Lord's potencies, they act according to his will. And that way, he doesn't do anything, or he has nothing to do, although he does so many things. Through the agency of his potencies, he does things. But he alone is enjoying pastimes in Vrindavan, while the creation is taking place, while the dissolution is taking place, while the maintenance is taking place, while he appears and he disappears. It's all being carried out by his various potencies, internal and external potencies. So even the withdrawal of the Yadu dynasty was by his internal potency, and guess what? If you're not within the internal potency, you can't understand it. It's a mystery. It's a mystery for those who are not devotees, and it's a subject matter that's understood by those who are devotees, because they're within the internal potency, or they're receiving that in this descending fashion. So, I'll read the translation for those three verses. I'm grouping them in three because our acharyas, at least Vishwanath Chakravarti, he combines them into a cluster of one verse. Prabhupada has kept them distinct, so the concept is together. Text 23 translation. Vidura, who's speaking? Suta Goswami is speaking. Suta Goswami is speaking about what he heard from Shukadeva Goswami in Maharaj Pariksha. And one of the things that took place is Shukadeva Goswami is narrating about historical event, where Krishna has left the planet. So when the Bhagavatam was spoken by Shukadeva Goswami, chronologically, it was after Krishna left. Because after Krishna left, Kali Yuga began. Yudhisthira left also. Marshbhikshit became king. Marshbhikshit was king for some time. He was cursed to die. Then the Bhagavatam was spoken. So he's now, and there's Sutta speaking about what he heard. So he's going earlier in time. There's Vidura, because the title of the chapter is Vidura Approaches Maitreya. So Vidura is in the forest, and he sees Uddhava. And they have some discussion. Uddhava leaves. He's gone to Bhadrikashram as Krishna has instructed. Now there's Vidura in the forest, being told by Uddhava, go find Maitreya. He's qualified. He's my superior in age. And he also heard everything that I heard, so you can hear from him. I have to go now. I've got some service for Krishna. Off to Bhadrikashram. So Vidura also heard from Uddhava about the appearance and disappearance of Lord Krishna. The super soul in the material world, where those kamas are, so the appearance of Lord Krishna in the mortal world, Krishna who is the super soul, so that's interesting. What is that that's within the heart of every living being? Sarvashachaham riddhi sannivishto. Super soul is within the heart of every living being. Right? Within the heart of every living being. So what's the question of super soul who is within the heart of every living being making his appearance? And then his disappearance. It's his lila. In this world. Yes, in this world. He who is fully spiritual can appear within this world. Yes, why not? If he can create the world, he can appear within it. And he can disappear at his will. He doesn't need a visa. Doesn't need to go through security. He just, you know, customs. He just appears. And what we're hearing in the verse is that Uddhava gave a synopsis of this long description that Krishna explained about his appearance and disappearance, and repeated by Uddhava. Now Maitreya has that understanding. Excuse me. Vidura has that understanding. And that understanding is a subject matter sought after with great perseverance by the great sages. We'll cover the verses and then go back to the purports. The Lord's glorious acts and his acceptance of various transcendental forms for the performance of extraordinary pastimes in the mortal world are very difficult for anyone other than his devotees to understand. And for the beasts, there's simply a mental disturbance. Understanding that he was remembered by Lord Krishna while quitting the world, Vidura began to cry loudly, overwhelmed by the ecstasy of love. So, in the purport, Prabhupada explains, the subject matter of the appearance and disappearance of the super soul, Lord Sri Krishna, is a mystery, even for the great sages. Now, Kunti says the same thing. She addresses Krishna in her prayers as the super soul. That she understands. But what's mysterious for her and even uncomfortable for her is he, the Supreme Lord, who is the Super Soul, appears as her nephew. So here she is, the aunt, like, you know, like the mother of the Super Soul. She feels uncomfortable. But you know, I'm worshiping you and you're coming and touching my feet like, Mother Kunti, may I leave now? I can't have your permission. I have to go now. Is it okay? Please give me your blessings. You're the super soul. What to speak of Mother Jasoda, who comes running after you with a stick, and you're crying in fear of that little stick in the hand of Mother Jasoda. Dinabandhu likes to make this differentiation. There's a stick and there's a little stick. Lati is a little stick. A little stick. That one. You're feared by fear personified. Death personified follows your order and you're afraid. That bewilders me. You're the super soul. So, in the verse Krishnasya Paramatmanaha, the yogis, their meditation is upon the Paramatma. And the devotees, their meditation is upon the Paramatma, who manifests forms and performs pastimes. So, the yogis who are meditating on Paramatma, it takes lifetimes of unbroken meditation. So, it's most exceptional. Great sages are very, very eager to understand this subject matter, how Paramatma appears performs pastimes, and disappears. If you have paramabha conception, that's postgraduate study. Such subject matters are certainly of increasing interest because the researchers have to search out the transcendental abode of the Lord, which he enters after finishing his pastimes in the mortal world. Even the great sages have no information that beyond the material sky is the spiritual sky, where Krishna eternally resides with his associates, although at the same time he exhibits his pastimes in the mortal world, in all the universes, one after another. So it's not like Krishna puts a sign on his door and says, out to lunch. I had to go to the material world to make some appearance, but I'll be back soon. Please come back in 125 years. Krishna is there in the spiritual world, eternally, at the same time, personally, of course, by his expansion. But how to understand that? The answer is by speculative knowledge, one can't. Vedeshu durlabham adurlabham atma bhakto, from Brahma Samhita. This is confirmed in Brahma Samhita. Goloka eva divasatya gilatma bhuta. That is, the Lord, by his inconceivable potency, resides in his eternal world, Goloka, yet at the same time, as the Supersoul, he is present everywhere, both in the spiritual and material skies by his multi-varieties of manifestation. Paramatma feature is not present in the spiritual world. The Paramatma feature is an expansion, a particular type of expansion, for the purpose of material creation, because we've turned our attention away from Krishna. But we can't be separate from Krishna, but we want to think that we're separate from Krishna. So Krishna hides himself within our heart. And on the other hand, that same Krishna who is in the spiritual world doesn't have to hide himself. So he's there before the devotee. Paramatma accompanies the living entity in the material world, just Brahmayan Sarvabhutani Yantra Rudhani Maya, to oversee our wanderings. And he provides these bodies to accommodate our desires to enjoy separately from him. And he oversees Maya Dyakshena Prakriti. Oversees the whole thing. But for those living entities that again turn their attention to him, he manifests himself before them. So in his multifarious forms, Krishna is always with the living entity. The living entity is always with Krishna. The delusion is there is no God. That's the material world, the place of delusion. But the place of God consciousness, he's there before the living entity. Therefore, his appearance and disappearance are simultaneously going on, and no one can definitely say which of them is the beginning and which is the end. These eternal pastimes have no beginning or end, and one has to learn them from the pure devotees and not waste valuable time in so-called research work, because that's not how Krishna is understood. So researching the Vedas, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? But it's disclosed, he's not found that way, but through the devotee, with reference to scripture, Krishna is revealed. Which is exactly what's being, this whole section is in the third canto preparing us to understand the transcendental nature of Krishna's appearance or his disappearance and his activities. And how is it being done? Through Krishna speaking to Uddhava. Actually, that comes in the 11th canto later. But those that heard Krishna speak to Uddhava. So Uddhava heard it. So he speaks to Vidura. Maitreya heard it. He speaks to Vidura. We're hearing both. So we're hearing of the transcendental nature. How is it so? It's being disclosed. Naham prakasha sarvasya yogamaya samagrata mudhoyam nabhi janati. Krishna reserves the right, Prabhupada's translation of this, to not disclose himself to those who are mudhas, foolish. But to those who are his devotees. So, however scholarly, adept, learned, austere, pious, etc., that's not the qualification. Krishna discloses himself to his devotee. Or that means to one who is devotee of his devotee. Because, and that's exactly what's happening here. Krishna is disclosing the transcendental nature of his appearance and his disappearance to the sages in Madhurikashram by sending Uddhava, unto whom he's disclosed that. Uddhava's carrying that message for them. Specifically, it's said, he's carrying the message for them. It's not just information, he's empowered to impart that realization to them. And they're qualified, so they'll understand it. They're devotees. Then focus goes next to the forms of the Lord, because within the heart is Paramatma, and there are various forms of the Lord. The forms of the Lord are not manushim tanam ashritam. They're not man-like and assumed. They're fully spiritual forms. In other words, it takes a while for Vedic teaching to understand our real identity as a spirit soul within the body. So once we have that spiritual conception, we may have a tendency to apply that same conception to Krishna. He's Krishna within this form or that form. That's a gross misunderstanding. There's no within and without as far as Krishna is concerned. He's absolute. So Krishna's form is Krishna. Ramchandra's form is Ramchandra. Jagannath's form is Jagannath. Was one Bengali Brahmin who wrote a poem in glorification of Lord Jagannath and Lord Chaitanya, and he wanted to read it to Lord Chaitanya. And Surup Damodar didn't even want it. He was to screen the reading before anything would go to Lord Chaitanya. He didn't even want to hear it. Because he understood the man was proud. And because of his pride, pride covers one's pure consciousness, and therefore it's not possible for him to have a proper understanding. He didn't want to hear it. But Mukunda kept insisting, so finally he heard it. And then he asked him some questions about the poem that he wrote. And he was speaking of the Lord within. And he asked him for clarification, what do you mean by this? Well, like Lord Jagannath has a form, and then there's the Lord within. stop writing poetry. Learn the teachings from Gadadhar Pandit or a qualified person who has proper understanding. Then you can write some poetry. Because otherwise you're making an offense by your gross misunderstanding of who is Lord Chaitanya and who is Lord Jagannath. The language is flowery and poetic, but the conclusion is wrong. Better if the language be simple, but the message be correct. The man was very ashamed, so he accepted the correction and placed himself in the care of the Vaishnavas that had proper understanding, so he could make advancement in spiritual life. And that's what Prabhupada is discussing in the purport. The jnanis and the yogis who may try to understand Krishna cannot possibly. The Lord never reveals himself to persons like the jnanis and yogis, and there are others who, because of their envying the Lord from the bottom of their hearts, are classified among the beasts, Pashunam. Pashun is animal. So among the beasts are those persons who, when hearing the pastimes of the Lord or the descriptions of the forms of the Lord, their minds just become agitated. Viklava. Atmanam. Viklava. Disturbed. Agitated. Their hearts become aggravated. Agitated. To hear. It's unfortunate. I've had direct experience. My thoughts just went to some experiences with people who, seeing paintings of Krishna, what to speak of deities, but seeing paintings of Krishna, they become agitated. In book distribution, for years and years of the book distribution, one of the books that we were distributing was Krishna book, wonderful book, and it was in three volumes, and volume one, two, and three each had some picture of Krishna. Third volume is a picture of Krishna, and it was Dwarkanath, deity. So, but the others were Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's form. And people would see, big letters, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and then a big picture. There's nothing indirect about that one. It was, Krishna. So people would look at the cover and they go, oh, who's that? Say, that's Krishna. Oh, God can't look like that. Excuse me, but why not? And some people, oh, no, you take this back. Their minds will become agitated because of that, from the core of their heart, ill disposition. Don't remind me of that person who I left. Yeah.
When my mother was in the hospital just before she left her body, I had been living in India, and I came back here, and I brought photos of Radha Madhava with me, and I put them next to her bed. And after a day or two, she's, take those pictures away, he scares me.
Okay.
I replaced it with the photo of my Purchanda. He was okay.
All right. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7.15, the miscreants who are simply concerned with material enjoyment, who work very hard like beasts of burden, can hardly know the Supreme Personality, Godhead, at any stage due to asurik bhava, or the spirit of revolt against the Supreme Lord. So there's this discussion, because it's directly within the verse. Anyesham duskarantaram pashunam viklavatmanaha. So Sutta Goswami is saying that this is a very profound, deep, important spiritual subject matter, that recipients of it can convey it, but others can't understand it. What to speak of persons that are living like animals, or are of this duskriti, pashu, not very complimentary language. For others, it's very difficult. But, yes, even for sages. But here at the third canto of Bhagavatam, at least the elements are being laid out for us very, very nicely. The transcendental bodily expansions manifested by the Lord for his pastimes in the mortal world, and the appearance and disappearance of such transcendental expansions, are difficult subject matters. And those who are not devotees are advised not to discuss the Lord's appearance and disappearance, lest they commit further offenses at the lotus feet of the Lord. The more they discuss the transcendental appearance and disappearance of the Lord in their asuric spirit, the more they enter into the darkest region of hell, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 16:20. Anyone who is against the transcendental loving service of the Lord is more or less a beastly creature, as confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, we have our caution about chanting. This question comes up from time to time, so we want to encourage people to chant because it's beneficial for them. And if we just tell them chant without telling them what the benefits are, why would they chant? But then we have the problem. We tell them what the benefits are, and then they start making offenses against the holy name. Goes to us. We're making an offense against the holy name. So what to do? Do but don't do. How are we supposed to handle that? So, a simple answer by Prabhupada's own example, we make this simple encouragement. Chant and be happy. Okay. And it worked. Especially if we're happy, we say chant and be happy. If we're like, chant and be happy. I don't know if I want to chant be happy like that. So we can teach best by example. For example, Vaishnava qualities. The transcendental happiness is one of them. Chant and be happy. And or chant, make your life sublime, or chant and become free from material misery or material unhappiness. So those are kind of like, okay, that's a very simple level, entry level descriptions. But to go more deeply into the glories of the chanting of the holy name, who like here, to an ordinary person, to understand the personality of Godhead in very confidential ways. One, the person who receives that may simply make some offense. Like there are opponents to Krishna consciousness, and specifically even to Srila Prabhupada, who have gone through Bhagavad Gita and picked out things where, you know, their program is to decry Bhagavad Gita. Not even so much to decry Srila Prabhupada, but, oh, look at this, Bhagavad Gita teaches that you should kill. This is a horrible teaching. Without understanding, you know, the deeper message. So that can happen. It does happen. Or people that are not qualified. Another nice example is so many times we heard from Srila Prabhupada that one should not go directly to the 10th canto and read of Krishna's confidential pastimes with the residents of Vrindavan. We should read consecutively 1st through 9th canto before reading the 10th canto. So many times Prabhupada said that, but then he made a summary study of the 10th canto, called the Krishna book, and off it went. So is he contradicting his own teaching? And the answer is no. What he considered was, I don't know if I am going to live long enough to complete the 10th canto in fullness. So that the name of Krishna and the pastimes of Krishna, as they become known to the world more and more over a period of time, let us have some literature whereby they can understand the pastimes of Krishna properly. That was his concern. So he made a summary, called it a summary study. And Prabhupada's explanation of what a summary study means, it means I can do what I want. That's what he said. That is, he made a summary in such a way that persons that haven't read cantos 1 through 9, and even just worldly people, could understand through the explanation he gave, you know, the frame in which the pastimes of Krishna were presented. He made it accessible without making offense. Now, still people can make offense. There are some people who are very expert at that. But for the innocent people, he presented Krishna book, so they would at least have the opportunity to properly understand Krishna's pastimes, including his appearance and his Raja Leela and his Mathura Leela and his Dwarka Leela. And there's not much in the 10th canto about Krishna's disappearance pastime. That's here in the 3rd canto. So it's being presented carefully for who was Prabhupada's audience? It was the world. He knew his books would be translated into so many different languages, so he wasn't speaking to people born in India. He wasn't speaking to, you know, people born in England that had connection with India. He was speaking to the world. You know, Thailand and Afghanistan and, you know, all parts of the world. Siberia. Now, what do they understand? China. What do they understand about Krishna? He was speaking to the world. So how to present these teachings so that an uneducated audience, an uncultured audience, could properly understand. That was his task as a world acharya. So he's presenting principles. One of the core principles is, not by an ascending process, only by a descending process can one understand. Otherwise it remains a mystery. And the last part of this morning's verses is Vidura's devotion for Krishna. So Sutta is narrating this meeting took place, Krishna and Uddhava. Maitreya was in the audience. Krishna left. Uddhava left, but before Uddhava left, Vidura came, found Uddhava. And in the course of that exchange, Uddhava conveyed that just before Krishna's departure, he was thinking of you. And hearing that, Uddhava, Vidura, understanding that he was remembered by Lord Krishna while quitting this world, Vidura began to cry loudly, overwhelmed by the ecstasy of love. You know, even when Krishna went to Hastinapur and making his plea that there not be war, just give the Pandavas some little place, then you take the rest of the world. And that was rejected. When Krishna visited, he stayed at Uddhava's home he stayed at Vidura's home because of the devotion Vidura had for Krishna. And Vidura, so what to speak of just up to Krishna's departure. As with the Pandavas, so with Vidura, Krishna was their life and soul. And that Krishna was thinking of him. It just filled his heart with transcendental love for Krishna, at the same time the pain of Krishna's separation, both simultaneous. He just broke into pieces and began crying in the ecstasy of love. Not like, you know, a worldly kind of, oh, somebody has gone. But in the ecstasy of love. Short purport, and then we'll end. Vidura was overwhelmed by ecstasy of love when he understood that Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God, had thought of him at the last moment. When he thought of himself as, although he thought of himself as insignificant, he was remembered by the Lord by his causeless mercy. Vidura accepted this as a great favor, and thus he cried. This crying is the last word in the progressive path of devotional service. One who can cry for the Lord in love is certainly successful in the line of devotional service. So it's not like, you know, at the end of class we'll have our crying.
Sadhana.
And we'll try to get it together to cry. A little sadhana. So, not like that. Or, you know, when children might cry, or men might cry, or women might cry, and just, okay, I cry, so now I'm advanced. But it's when there's deep spiritual feelings for Krishna. And it's described in Nectar Devotion that there's a stage, even for neophytes like us, where such feelings may awaken some emotion. And it's described there that it's not the same as Vidura. It's not the same as our, you know, the gopis. It's abhas. Bhakti abhas. It's a prompt from Krishna, a reflection of that pure emotion. And that even that reflection of pure emotion is wonderful. A special little mercy that something stirs in our heart and we have some feelings for it, you know, for Krishna. And sometimes, you know, if you're in kirtan or some drama of Krishna, or you're reading or something, and some tears come to your eyes, it's not the same as what's being described here. It's abhas. It's just a hint, a reflection of that pure state. And in that pure state, emotions are spontaneous. And they come of their own accord. It's not we try to cultivate those moments. They come of their own accord. What we cultivate is our attachment for Krishna. Just this morning I was hearing Prabhupada repeating, my Guru Maharaj used to say, one should not try to see Krishna. Or pray to Krishna, please come before me. You're my order supplier and here's my order. Please come before me. Rather, one should act in such a way that Krishna will want to see you. And Krishna will call you, please come to me. I want to see you. Don't act in such a way that you want to see Krishna, but act in such a way Krishna will want to see you. That was Bhaktisiddhanta's teaching. So same for these emotional states. We don't practice the emotional state. We practice becoming attached to Krishna throughout the medium of service. Simply serving Krishna in uninterrupted fashion. Bhaktir avya vichalini. Maichananya yogena bhaktir avya vichalini. This is stated in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita as the item of knowledge. In fact, the crown, that quality that brings all other qualities. The quality of in nectar devotion is 26 qualities of a devotee, and one of those qualities is called Swarup Lakshana, and the other 25 are called Tatastha Lakshana, marginal characteristics. And from the one, Swarup Lakshana, all the other ones follow. The example is given, like a queen, she may have many attendants or ladies-in-waiting, or there's different terminologies. And as she moves about the palace, they follow behind her with her attendants to her. But she's not interested in those attendants. Her primary focus is upon the king. So with this one quality of mayi chananya yogena bhaktir avya vicharini, the other qualities follow. Or Krishna eka sharana in Rupa Goswami's language. Sharana means surrender. So with Krishna is our only shelter. Like Draupadi, when she was being defiled and disgraced by Dushasana. She tried to check. He was too powerful. She wasn't a weakling, but she was unable to check him. And so she took complete shelter of Krishna. Krishna eka sharana. So we have similarly a tendency that we use our abilities and whatever it is that we have. Strength, intelligence, cleverness, this and that and the other thing. Use them in Krishna is one thing, but Krishna is our shelter when we're using them. Should be like that. And when that's the position, everything else comes. Everything that's desired comes. Desirable comes. That's the position of a devotee. By accomplishing one thing, all other desirable things can be accomplished. That's Lord Chaitanya's definition of faith. Shraddha Shabde Vishvaskahi Sudrita Nishchaya Krishne Bhakti Sarva Karma Krita Hoya. By achieving devotion to Krishna, Sarva karma krita hoya, all other desirable things are accomplished. That's what faith is. With one who has faith can take full shelter in Krishna. And everything else is accomplished. Now we become lazy, but by Krishna's mercy, everything desirable becomes accomplished. There's challenges in life that, how is this going to work out? I know that place very well. The challenges, ooh. I'm dealing with a couple of them right now. Very challenging things. Ooh. In devotional service to Krishna, but somehow Krishna holds the solution. If we have proper shelter in Krishna and purity to receive Krishna's mercy, then everything can work nicely. That's the faith of a devotee. So, and there, see if there's any questions or comments.
So, in this pastime, it's another glimpse at the theme of proper hearing, proper receiving, as you pointed out about Uddhava's empowerment to give the message to the sages in Badrinath who are qualified to receive that message. So, we receive so many opportunities to hear from qualified speakers, and we understand something of the qualities necessary to receive, but the realization doesn't, you know, the hearing is there, but the realization doesn't come so easily, quickly.
Well, this quickly isn't necessary. Easily isn't necessary.
Strongly.
Yes, if that's our desire, even we may be, you know, very distant, Krishna will help us cover that distance. On our own, so it's a question of where our shelter is. On our own, we're not going to cover that distance. But if we're cultivating the mood of dependence upon Krishna, Krishna can carry us. That's faith. It's not like, you know, we make Krishna our order supplier, we just kind of lounge around and say, whenever you're ready, Krishna, you can carry me. Not like that. But our endeavors should be with full dependence upon Krishna. And that's our life as devotees. We cultivate that mood, and with that mood of service, with dependence upon Krishna, that distance is bridged. Yeah, but?
No, I just had a very interesting thought there, which was sometimes instead of getting the realization that we are hoping for, the alternate realization comes that we're not ready for that realization. So you get one type of understanding either way, by Krishna's mercy, becomes clear.
Well, but we may not be ready for that realization, but we can make a step in that direction. And that's Krishna consciousness. Little steps. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one of my favorite sayings of Bhaktivinoda Thakur is, progress is a series of small steps in the right direction. I like that one. Progress is a series of small steps in the right direction. So, the goal and steps to reach the goal. Progress is making steps to reach the goal. And if they're small steps, that's fine. Just continue making small steps towards the goal and you'll get there. Right?
Yeah.
Anything else?
You mentioned that there's those qualities, and the most important is to take shelter in Krishna and to serve Krishna, and the rest kind of will follow. Doesn't that mean that we shouldn't be conscious and be forgiving and grateful and, you know, some, like little.
There's a subset of that one.
So really, I don't need to care about, you know, how about the rest. Just focus on Krishna.
Well, that's not exactly the way that works. Following behind the pleasing of Krishna, okay, now I have my husband, and I have the devotees, and I have Prabhupada's books, and I have my bead bag, and I have the non-devotees. So now how do we interact with all those entities? It's following behind, let Krishna be pleased.
So actually, I am forgiving and grateful because I want to please Krishna.
That's correct. Correct, exactly.
I'm doing it because I want to please Krishna. So it's still pleasing Krishna.
Exactly. Because if that, because I want to please Krishna component is missing, a whole lot of other things start to happen. My caring is with a strong element of pride. I'm a caring person. I mean, it may not be so gross like that, but it contaminates the caring itself. And there's other people that aren't as caring as me. There are other people who are not as caring as me. Pride. But the conditioning of happiness and the mode of goodness. Instead of happiness and Krishna's happiness. Well, it's the difference between the spiritual and material world. And in this world, the mode of goodness is rare, and it's valued. It's esteemed very highly. From the Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita perspective, it's another thing that we're to overcome. And how do we overcome it? For the pleasure of Krishna. Let me be caring. Let me be compassionate. Let me be charitable. Let me, of what I have, give to others. The mode of goodness is, we all know what it is. We've all experienced it. We become conditioned by a sense of happiness and that we've done a good deed. We extended ourselves. We didn't have to. We went out of our way to exhibit an act of kindness upon someone else or a group of someone else's. And there's a happiness connected with that. It's a conditioning element.
So I'm saying that then brings pride. If I don't have that consciousness that I'm doing it for Krishna.
Yes. Yeah. And it lulls one into a contentedness, a complacency in regard to our relationship with Krishna. One thinks that that's godliness. Instead of for Krishna.
By itself, right?
Yes. In and of itself. According to the first verse, no, the second verse of the Chatur Shloki Bhagavatam verses is to think that something has value unto itself apart from Krishna, know that to be my illusory energy.
It's like zero's problem.
Yeah, exactly. Without the one, it's zero. It's illusory energy. It appears to be the real thing, but it's not. And we accept that which is not to be the real thing. And we get stuck in the material world, birth and death, being kind and charitable and compassionate and stuck in the material world, forgetful of our relationship with Krishna. I think that's godly.
That's what happens within the yoga circles. That's what I've seen there early in the mode of goodness.
That's nice.
But
we just put the one in front.
Right.
And part of the thing is you say it softly, as far as they're concerned, that is godliness. That is the one. Or say it more strongly or abruptly, there's an attitude towards God. But we don't need it. The kingdom of God without God. Mm-hmm. But it's mode of goodness, so not, you know, feels good. A happiness. And then you just put it in a blender and turn it on high speed and it's all one. And the final analysis, it's all one. We're just becoming one. You know what I mean? You feel the oneness? And where's Krishna? We left him out at the doorstep. Tried to bring him in, and
I was wondering that people do not like the idea of God, because the concept which they were getting is not attractive.
Yes, so that's right.
Thinking recently that, Krishna is wonderful. When I talk to those people, those who believe in God, I often ask them if they do believe in God, and then I'm saying, God is really wonderful. He's amazing. Because I think they don't have, it's not attractive, the concept of God they have.
Rabindra Sarup Prabhu, who's a wonderful speaker and wonderful Vaishnava, was speaking at a class. He was describing this. I've heard him say it several times. He was giving a class somewhere, Temple University, where he graduated, because he was a philosophy major, so the philosophy department. And as he was going along, halfway through the class, somebody was obviously uncomfortable. So he stopped the class. He said, what's your problem? And he said, I don't believe in God. So he said, well, tell me who that person is. Tell me your conception of God that you don't like. That's just, I agree with you. That conception of God is not attractive. Now let's consider a different conception of God. That's lovable. And that's Krishna. That's the one who we love and I'm serving. Now that one I feel the same as you do. This one. Oh, that's very attractive.
That's why people turn away, because it's just not attractive.
The illusory energy is very expert in engaging people in illusion. Yes.
But sometimes we know that something could be pleasing to Krishna, but we are not able to do it for laziness or uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Or maybe just we can't afford to do it. So what to do in that situation? What should be the thought or action?
Well, first I'll add a little Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur message to this. It's a standard stage in bhakti. So don't feel alone. Because it's universal. It's called anishtata bhakti, unsteady devotion. And there's two categories. There's out of a group of six, he describes, there's a category where one is unable to perform commitments or vratas that I should do. And then the other is things that are detrimental and I know I should do without. I can't know, even though it's very clear I should do without it, I cling to it. That's a cause of, or it's a stage of unsteadiness. The cause of that unsteadiness is anartas, or unwanted things in the heart. So it's at the heart level, it's not at the behavior level. You can go back to this just immediate prior discussion. One's effort alone is not enough. That's a nice realization. Now, what do you do when you know that your effort alone is not enough? You don't stop making effort. It's Krishna! You join your effort with dependence upon Krishna. And that's like, you know, an uplifting feature. Then there's another. The order of the spiritual master becomes one's life and soul. So it's like that's a propellant. Something pulling and something pushing. Besides, you know, I'm a passenger. You know, I've got the steering wheel, the gas pedal, and the brake pedal. But without fuel in the tank, I'm not going anywhere. So being propelled by the instruction of the spiritual master. So, you know, we have Prabhupada's books, his teachings, that say, rise early and perform Mangal Arati.
Oh, I'm really tired.
But the order of the spiritual master is there. So whether I'm tired or not, you know, when it's time, I rise. Because the order of the spiritual master. And then there's the attractiveness of Krishna, the call of Krishna. And the mercy of Krishna. Krishna, please help me. And that empowers our effort that before was not going anywhere because of our weakness of heart. That's one way of answering or responding. Here's something that's very similar, just the language is different. Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Harinam Chintamani, he describes the categories of anartas in a different way than Vishwanath does. One of them, there's three, offenses, hridaya dorbalyam is a word in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna uses, weakness of heart. Arjuna, you know, you're an Aryan, you know the higher purpose of life, but you're not doing it. How has this petty weakness of heart overcome you? It's an anartha. You know what to do. And somehow, you're in this place that you don't know what to do. But you know what to do. You know the higher values of life. So how is this anartha of weakness of heart overcome you? So, at the other side, how did it work? Krishe vachanam tava, Krishna, I'm ready. So what happened in between was Krishna's words. So when you read Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's speaking to you. Krishna's speaking to Arjuna, but Krishna's speaking to you by speaking to Arjuna. You know that example. The mother speaks to the daughter-in-law by speaking to the daughter. So Krishna's speaking to Arjuna, and he's speaking to you. And he's saying, give up your weakness of heart. In one sense it's a chastisement, but it's an upliftment. Give it up. What would I put in its place? You know, a spiritual conception of what I am to do. And Krishna's mercy will carry you because you're trying, but alone, on your effort alone, it's not sufficient. The capacity to overcome that unsteady bhakti stage to the steady bhakti stage is within the process of bhakti itself. It's Krishna's mercy, and it's the compelling and impelling strength of the spiritual master's instruction. So what do we find? Vyavasayatmika buddhi, you know that verse, Bhagavad Gita 2:41, ekeha kuru nandana bahusha kahya nantascha. Prabhupada explains that success in spiritual life comes by having implicit faith in the order of the spiritual master. One who places implicit faith in the order of the spiritual master will be successful. The converse is also true. You don't, you won't. Implicit faith means within the instruction is the capacity to carry out the instruction. So am I taking the instruction seriously? Am I taking the relationship seriously? Am I taking the person seriously? Let's say in your marriage, your wife may make some request, you know, like repeatedly, and if you don't do, I'm not saying that's the dynamic, but if that was the case, in some relationship, if the husband is saying, my dear wife, can you please not burn the toast? And every time she burns the toast. Every time. What does it say? Oh, I'm sorry. How many times can you say you're sorry? Just like, don't leave it in the toaster so long. You know. So it's a relationship with Krishna. Krishna's calling us. So we do because we want to please Krishna. And by wanting to please Krishna, and how to best please Krishna is through the instructions of the spiritual master, we know how to please Krishna. My life and soul. And that carries you beyond the unsteadiness. The hridaya durbalyam, the weakness of heart. The relationship carries you beyond that. That's bhakti. It's not just dependent upon our own effort. Effort is a must, but it's not sufficient. That's nice. It's an invitation for devotion to Krishna. We make some endeavor, and we're dependent upon Krishna's mercy at the same time. Mother Jasoda wants to bind Krishna, she can't bind Krishna. She doesn't give up, she keeps trying to bind Krishna. Then Krishna gives his mercy, she can bind Krishna. So, continue to try, even despite the unsteadiness, but recognize it's something inside my heart. It's not, the effort is wrong. But Krishna wants to see your sincerity. So you give that, show Krishna the sincerity, he'll help you. Impelled also by the instructions of the spiritual master, investing faith in that. My life and soul.
Can I add?
Last question.
No, not a question, Maharaj. Just wanted to. You used to say something that really was very powerful for me. That was the same topic. You used to say, we're not the International Society for Behavior Change. We're the International Society for Krishna Consciousness.
Okay, it's behavior modification.
Behavior modification. So that was very powerful for me because it's not adjustments on any other level other than deep within the heart by purification.
Saying that, the behaviors are important. We want to rise early and perform Mangalarti and chant our japa and offer our food to Krishna. There are behaviors, but what's behind them is what's really the essence. And the steadiness will come when the essence is there. We want to please Krishna. Right? Okay, thank you very much.
Bhagavad Gita. Swami Ki Jai.